You're listening to SBS News.
Thank you for talking to SBS World News.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
So firstly, you've recently arrived in Australia. What's your first impressions and how different is life in Australia compared to what's happening in India at the moment?
Well, the life in Australia is quite different from what I have lived through over the last 1 year, initially in Mexico and the 1 month that I spent in India on the way to Australia. You are in the fortunate position at the moment of being practically COVID-free. We thought we were almost there up till February, but then the new wave hit us and things are quite a struggle at the moment. But we are overcoming it with our own efforts and with assistance from a lot of friends, including Australia, including the various governments of Australia in the States, and of course, including the very generous contributions by the Indian-Australian community here. We value this friendship and this assistance in our time of need greatly, just as we had tried to help the world when things were better for us all of last year. It is now wonderful to see the world supporting us.
There are hundreds of stranded Australians in India at the moment. Given India's health system hasn't been effectively coping with the outbreak for even its own citizens, let alone stranded Australians, what would you do differently to successfully repatriate Australians?
Well, I'm not going to second guess the government of Australia. They have their own decisions, they have their own concerns, and I'm sure they think of a lot of factors when they come up with their decisions on how many they can accept back, how quickly they can accept them back, what are their quarantine facilities, their overall capacities and capabilities. So I don't think it's for me really to comment on those.
Would you consider working with the Australian government to maybe speed up vaccinations for those people stranded in India to help better protect them whilst they wait to return home?
Well, vaccinations are available to anyone in India.
Even Australian citizens?
Yes, anyone. Anyone who is there can register and get the vaccines done. And I think everybody's agreed, even though there might be vaccine hesitancy, as they call it, in many places. But everybody's agreed that the longer-term solution to staying safe from the COVID pandemic is widespread vaccinations of almost the entire population.
Obviously, the India travel ban was quite a controversial issue at the time. You came just at the peak of it all of the discussions. Do you think Indian Australians are right to be feeling singled out?
I won't put it in those terms, really. Indian Australian community here is a large and growing community. They are a highly respected community. I know Australians and the various governments of Australia value their contributions. They have achieved much success. They have contributed to taxation here. They've contributed to job creation here, to the skill levels over here, to filling various categories of work and jobs over here. So I think they are greatly, greatly valued. So I do not think that would really have been an angle. This would, as the Australian government says, based on medical advice on what had to be done at a particular point of time. Things are improving now in Australia, and I'm quite sure that these restrictions will also be eased up as a result.
Were you surprised by the travel ban, the severity in terms of the fines and the jail time, as opposed to just a temporary pause on flights?
Once again, we are told that this is as per Australian law and the determination of their experts. So again, it is not for me to comment on that.
Why do you think similar measures weren't taken for the UK or South Africa, for example, when they had similar variants of the virus?
Well, I wish I could talk with the benefit of having been here myself and seen what was happening at that time. Unfortunately, I only got here a month ago. So once again, I'm sure there were determinations made at that time, which could have been different from the determinations made this time. Again, I would defer to the expertise of the Australian government in these matters.
But as someone with lots of world knowledge about the variants and the severity, the UK and South Africa were going through similar things. Were you surprised that the same measures weren't taken?
Well, I've seen some people make those connections and talk about those possible factors which are different this time. But again, it is really not for me to comment on those.
Do you think, given all of this, there is, though, a perception of racism in Australia?
Well, I have found nothing except welcome and love and regard for India and Indian Australians over here. So no, I would not use those terms.
And you're obviously speaking very closely with the Indian community in Australia. And has there been any feedback to that?
No. As you said, I have been attempting to meet as many people as I can in the short time I've been here. And not one of them has raised those concerns with me.
Australia relies heavily on international students. Many are Indian. Do you think that they will return after all of this, or do you think that they might go to other countries that are opening up quicker or maybe considered friendlier?
Well, I think they will return. They have, after all, already invested in their education over here and continue to do so. They have found this a good country to study in, and I'm quite certain that they will return. I'm also aware that the various universities in different parts of Australia are attempting to find solutions to how they can start bringing those students back. And I think with those joint efforts of the universities, of the state governments, and of course of the federal government, sooner or later we will start seeing the students return.
And is the Indian government working with those sort of stakeholders to help bring them back, seeing as they're such a crucial part to the Australian economy, really?
Well, there's not much we can do to bring them back, because as long as restrictions remain over here, there's nothing much that we can do. But those are exactly the restrictions that I mentioned, that jointly the various stakeholders in Australia, first and foremost, are attempting to find solutions to.
Many people might not know, but India is, of course, the world's largest vaccine producer, yet it's struggling to find enough vaccines for its own people. Why is that?
Well, there are supply constraints, and those are a result of bottlenecks in receiving raw materials as well. I'm told that almost 300 different items of raw materials go into producing a vaccine, the COVID vaccine particularly. Many of those raw materials come from only a few sources, and most of them are in Europe and North America. And there were supply constraints for that, which led to the vaccines not being able to be produced at the scale that one would have wanted to, and that some of the large Indian vaccine producers would have liked to. Fortunately, we've now seen an easing up of those problems. President Biden in the USA has himself stepped in to ease those restrictions that had been there on some of those raw material supplies. And the Serum Institute of India particularly, which is the largest manufacturer in India, has itself said that beginning June, the production will ramp up again. And by July, there will be many more vaccines coming onto the market than present.
India is obviously trying to procure more vaccines. Do you think that that process is better to be centralized rather than sort of onto the states for responsibility?
Well, the government of India decided that recently that it would be better perhaps to have many more stakeholders, the state governments that is, also directly purchase those vaccines, just to ease up the efforts. We will see whether this leads to anywhere or not, because I heard that some of those vaccine suppliers have actually told the state governments that they would rather supply only directly to the central government. If that be the case, it will be the central government that will buy and then distribute to the states. So this is just a matter of process rather than anything else.
And India, of course, is dealing with the world's worst COVID crisis currently. Why wasn't the government of the world's second most populous nation better prepared ahead of the second wave?
Well, hindsight is 2020, and one could perhaps think of several ways that we could have prepared ourselves better. But you do remember that even last year, we were still one of the most populous nations in the world. And the fears were expressed even at that time, when COVID first came, that India would be greatly impacted simply because of its population size, the dense nature of our urban centers and our villages. But it turned out actually that we came out swimmingly well, frankly. We had amongst the lowest percentage per million of affected people. We had, and we still have, amongst the lowest mortality rates. The absolute numbers are large, but the percentage in percentage terms, we remain one of the best. And there was perhaps a certain amount of complacency that may have set in when we saw in as recently as in January and February, very low case loads, very low new cases coming up, and very little demand on the hospitals and the medical systems. Perhaps the citizenry as well became a little complacent. Perhaps discarded some of the social distancing rules that, on hindsight, one can say ought to have been observed for a longer period of time. So that was one reason. And then, of course, you've got the threat coming up from these variants, you know, which are behaving differently. They are apparently more virulent. They are spreading faster. They are attacking even younger people. The time from infection to the need for hospitalization, where symptoms develop to an extent that you do need to be hospitalized, that time period has shortened. So there's so much that we still do not know about this virus, about its behavior, about its spread, and about its impact.
Some of the states are bracing for a potential third wave. What would the Modi government do differently this time?
Well, all governments learn from history, they learn from past practice, and I'm sure that there would be a lot of lessons learned on what happened during the second wave and what we need to do if and when a third wave might also come to India. But right now we are concentrating on battling the second wave, rolling it back. The last few days has seen some good results. The numbers are falling and falling rapidly. The medical systems are not that stressed any longer. And let us first get over the second wave. But I'm sure we will be better prepared in various ways for a third wave as and when it might happen.
As another country that some would consider has become complacent, what are some of the lessons that Australia can learn from what's happening in India?
Well, those are obvious lessons. I don't think anybody should be complacent, because you really don't know when and how the infections might spread in any country or in any society. I have no doubt that the epidemiologists and the medical experts of Australia have a very close watch on this, closer than what one might expect, because as citizens and residents in Australia, one is really living in a practically COVID-free environment. But I'm quite sure that the experts remain on guard.
Hi, Commissioner, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.